It is Friday, August 5. Good morning. The Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. We have a couple of the highest level substitutes in you'll ever see this morning. BlockBet is back. Steve Blocker-Roach, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. What about that for an intro? I'm a blow-in. How did that happen? Who put that together?
The great Jono.
Jono.
Knows all your career highlights, Block.
He's a good kid, Jono.
And some like lowlights.
He's a good bloke. What about last night? Timing's everything for the Roosters. And we'll talk about it a little bit more, I'm sure. But what, the Broncos, are they starting to crumble?
A loss to the Tigers
at home.
A bit
of a soft underbelly there.
Well, our other special guest this morning, who's come from the deep southern suburbs of Sydney, as deep as they come.
What, the Shire?
Right up to the northern suburbs of Sydney. Is it even the Shire where you are? It's lower than the Shire,
isn't it? North Wollongong, Jared. Some people like to call it.
Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald Morning, mate.
Morning, Jared. Morning, Block. It's called the Shire. I technically live in the Shire, but it's probably easier for me to get to Wollongong than it is to get to the city. So, it took me about pretty much exactly on an hour, Jared, with absolutely no traffic to still get here. So,
what time did you get up?
3:30, 20 to 4, something like that.
But he's such a good fella. He even told me last night he didn't let a couple of mates down who said, you know, they wanted him to go and have a beer with him. Yeah. He couldn't say no.
A couple of quiet ones, Jared.
Yeah, very quiet.
Quiet ones, and I was back in bed by about 10:30. So just back on Blockers, how much did you get fined for that, for patting Eddie Ward on the head?
Five gorillas. Five gorillas and four weeks suspension. And Keithy Barnes said, and you'll be paying the fine too, Blocker. So I did. I paid the fine, but it was funny, you know, how it worked out. I know I shouldn't say this, but I bought the rights off the Telegraph for the photo.
Did you really?
And I reckon I've sold 800 of them.
So he's more than paid for the fine.
More than paid for the fine. I'm flying.
There's always an opportunity, isn't there, Blocker?
Opportunity.
Brilliant.
We talk about it all the time.
34-16 last night, the Roosters over the Broncos. And Adam, you were saying off air, or you pondered it to us just before the show. Brisbane, could they all of a sudden be in a little bit of trouble?
Well, we've been talking about them making the top four all year, Jared, but I'm just starting to wonder, and I don't know if Block subscribes to this theory, there might even be a sneaky chance of falling out the back door altogether and missing the finals. Like, listen, they're playing Newcastle next week at Suncorp Stadium. Like, surely they win that game, given the way Newcastle's going.
They win that game.
But they go play the Storm and the Eels in the next two games. Two teams you think are somewhere maybe rebounding, back on the rebound. And then they've got the Dragons down in Sydney for the final round of the season. Now, I think the Dragons will be out of top eight calculations by then. So you think that Brisbane can win that game. But I don't know. I'm just not completely convinced they're an absolute lock for the top eight at the moment.
You know what I look at? I always look at the bounce back factor. Now, good sides bounce back after a poor performance. Now, they got flogged by the Tigers last week. That's what worries me. If they'd have played well last night against the Roosters, then I'd be saying they're still alive. But watching them last night, the game was all over in the first 20 minutes. Yeah. Did anyone, hang on, while we're at it, did anyone see the forward pass that Corey Oates scored from? What are Touchies doing these days?
They're just
redundant.
Not involved in the game anymore.
Do anything.
What do they do?
I don't know. I'll tell you what they do. They run really fast after goal kicks back to the halfway line. You ever seen how quick they run?
It's like they're waiting. They're almost waiting for this forward pass technology to come in, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then they'll be completely redundant.
Yeah, but they're scared to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mate, get in there.
Well, it's maybe it's complacency due to the bunker coming in.
Yeah, potentially. But as a Touchy, don't you have two jobs? One, to call a forward pass, and two, to help the referee keep the teams 10 metres apart.
Yeah, that was the big thing. That, you know, when the game really got a lot quicker, that's what I was saying, that the Touchy should mark the 10 metres. Do you know what I mean? And with all the lines on the ground, it's not that hard to judge where you are if you're back 10 metres. The ref can just ref the ruck.
Well, that debate again, though. Should we have two referees, one to look after the ruck, if the Touchies aren't doing anything at the moment?
I didn't like it because it was they weren't on the same page all the time. They think about the game differently, and that's fine. That's why we got all those different decisions all the time.
I think the game is so complex these days. There are so many different rules. There is so much happening. I think it's almost too hard for one referee to do, and that's why they defer to the bunker all the time. I'm actually a fan of having a second referee, bringing back a second referee just to police the ruck, but without a whistle.
Yeah.
and they can just communicate with the main referee through the mics, whatever they do, the headset. And their sole job, that second referee, is just control the ruck.
Do you know, everyone thinks I'm mad. I mooted this a few years ago. With the injuries and all the twisted knees and ankles and drop tackles and all that sort of stuff. I wonder if we could ever go to two and a tackle and that's it. I reckon mothers would be a lot happier about it. I reckon, mate, it's the collision with three blokes coming in and the third man coming in and axing, as they call it.
Well, what do you do when Nelson's just charging up the field and there's only two of you and you can't get
him
down?
Mate, you learn how to tackle. Mate, you get in the sand pit. You get in the sand pit and learn.
There will be an argument, I reckon, Block, saying if you know, say for guys trying to score and you're desperately trying to save a tackle, and you have to say, "Oh, no, sorry, only two guys." That's the devil's advocate, I suppose.
I'm just trying to protect the legs and knees and ankles of these players. Because, mate, running in like Corrigan did the other week and that drop tackle, mate, we've got to get it out of the game. I'm telling you, it is the worst thing in the game. It is a cheap shot. It's been trained by all the jiu-jitsu blokes.
Yep.
We've got to get it out, mate. It's not part and fabric of our game.
At what stage, Block, do the players have to take a responsibility and say, okay, we're going to look after this ourselves, right? Because it's got our control now, you're right.
And you can't.
The ruck has become so important, and these guys are taught all these different manoeuvres to slow down the ruck. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. Because that was an awful injury last week. And I thought the 4 weeks of Pat Carrigan,
I thought it was on the light side. Mate, have a look at the poor bugger he did it to. He's out for five months or something. Yeah.
If they gave him 5, 6, 7 weeks, no issues here with me.
But that's what they have to do,
Adam.
They've got to make it a deterrent that you'll never do it again because the suspension or the penalty for it is so big that you don't even think about doing it.
Exactly.
Cameron Smith in commentary on Nine last night made such a good point. Joseph Suaalii came in belted. Oh, I can't remember who he belted, but Cameron Smith said you just don't get rewarded for a great one-on-one tackle anymore.
You don't.
You just don't.
Not at all. Because you're virtually liable to get off them straight away if it's a one-on-one tackle. What about the great Beaver Menzies, Block? How many great cover tackles he made in defence?
Clean around the hips and around the legs. Mm. Yeah.
But there is absolutely no point doing that in the game these days.
Well, the other thing now is players are that strong. You have a look when there's a like half-pie dominant tackle. The bloke with the ball, players are that strong now. The bloke with the ball gets up before the blokes who have tackled him. You watch. Every time. So, look, I'll go against my two in the tackle, but I'm trying to work out how we get rid of these lower leg injuries and all that sort of stuff, because I'm telling you, blokes spearing in third man in at the knees, mate, it's a cheap shot. It's not a go. It's not tough.
Yeah, and that's... And that's why I think having that referee purely focus on the ruck can potentially help.
Yeah.
Whether it occurs in practice, so that we do get an improvement in that area, I think we've got to try it. But we went back from
two referees to one,
so are we going to go back to two? It's probably unlikely.
It's a massive call for the NRL to go back to two referees after they made that stand a couple of years ago and said, no, we're going to one referee, and then to backtrack again. They're going to have to swallow some pride if they do go down that path. But you just think what it's like for a lead referee these days. The people that he's listening to in his ear, he's listening to the bunker. He's listening to a referee coach in the stands.
Yeah.
He's got two touch judges trying to talk to him. He's looking for the 10 metres. He's looking for foul play. He's looking at the ruck.
Let's give the touchy some more responsibility. Give him the guidelines and say, righto, here, this is what you're in charge of.
Mm-hmm. I think we'd like to see them do more, that's for sure. Boys, last night... James Hooper on Fox Sports broke a story that Josh Reynolds, our great mate here at the Big Sports Breakfast, could be heading back to the Dogs. Now, I got in touch with Josh last night, who's having a fantastic holiday, by the way.
Is he sending
me a video at some delicious pool? No, he's with his mum, so I think he's still in Greece. But he did tell me that he honestly doesn't know where it's come from. He loves the Dogs, of course, but he's just enjoying his holiday at the moment and he's looking forward to coming home and hopefully sorting something out wherever he can. Mm. And naturally, the Dogs is a fit we'd love to see with Josh because he's made it very well known how much he loves that club and the club loved him. You still remember the scenes there when he played his last game and the crowd all coming on the field. But... you'd love to see it happen because he still has the burning desire to play another year, Josh, and probably finish, on terms that he'd like before leaving the game. So hopefully it all works out. But Josh just saying at this stage, he doesn't know anything about it.
Well, it's a low-risk play for the Dogs if it does happen, isn't it, Jared? They're not going to pay him a whole lot of money. He comes back to a club that he absolutely loves, and he can probably provide some value backing up a couple of players. He'd be on it, imagine, wouldn't be on it. If it does come to fruition, not a whole lot of money, but...
he wouldn't be doing it for the money, would he?
Of course not. Of course not. They probably need a backup for Reid Marnie at hooker next year because Jeremy Marshall-King is going to the Dolphins. He can back up Matty Burton in the halves, potentially at 5'8". He'll just be one of those depth players that the Dogs could do. If they don't have to pay him a lot of money, I can see it being a sort of a low-risk, potentially a high-reward play.
I reckon he's a great bloke to have around the joint. He's got that infectious personality. I reckon he'd be great for the young blokes coming through and great club man. I reckon they might even give him a job in marketing there. You know, do you know what they do now, the Bulldogs? Terry Lamb's been there for 154 years, Terry. When a sponsor comes on board or a big gold sponsor or, someone that comes on board and puts money, he actually delivers the membership and all that to them. I love that awesome idea. Mm. That's awesome. Mm. Imagine Terry Lamb knocking on your door and saying, mate, I'm going to take you to lunch today and congratulations on the sponsorship and here we go.
There's been a push from a lot of people at that club to get a lot of the old boys back involved because you see Terry Lamb around the club a lot now. I think Gus and the chairman, John Currie, have really pushed that. Paul Langmack's around the club a bit now. You see him at functions. Willie Mason's back doing some work with a lot of the kids and part of their coaching set up in their pathways. So, I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So what do you reckon? What do you reckon Potter will keep the job there? You reckon he's putting some pressure on him or you reckon it's already done?
I think they're a fair way down the road with Cameron Seraldo Block. I don't think he's put pen to paper yet. At least that's the information that I've got. But I think they're a long way down the road.
Pretty convincing, Gus, isn't he?
Yeah. Gus has done this very shrewdly.
He
threw a smother
wasn't even
the other
thinking about a coach only a matter of weeks ago. I haven't spoken to anyone.
He had lunch with Maguire the other day just to throw the scent off.
That might have been a bit of a, come on, Cameron, we need to get a decision soon let's get this across the line. But you raise a good point about Mick Potter Block. He's done an outstanding job there, hasn't he? Like in the 8 or 9 weeks he's been in charge, like even if they do give the job to Cameron Seraldo, like they'd be mad not to try and find a spot for Mick Potter somewhere in that organisation.
Yeah.
Whether it's coaching the New South Wales Cup team or whether it's an assistant to Cameron at NRL level, I don't know.
It just looks like he's gone in there and just gone in with his own style and said, righto, boys, off comes the shackles. Let's play a bit of footy. And how good have the Bulldogs been?
Finally. Because it felt like for years they were just agonising to watch.
Oh, couldn't score
they
a point.
Could not score tries. Already on the text line, Craig at Ipswich, listening in Queensland. Good on you, Craig. All-star crew this morning, Loz and Clark, you better watch out. Only 10 minutes in. Rate the subs highly. There you go, boys.
Yeah, well, guess what?
You've started fast.
I shan't be getting out of bed at 4 o'clock every morning.
The back page of the telly, Radley's Roosters run right. Watching Victor Radley last night, I was just thinking, he is exactly the bloke we missed in Origin 3.
He loves collision, doesn't he?
Oh, how good. I just love him. He and Matt Burton, I think, are my two favourite players.
He puts his head where you wouldn't put your hand.
What about that cut?
Yeah.
That was old school blocking.
Nice, Nick.
It was shooting out.
Isn't it funny how we say, we don't want to show the violence and all the blood and all that, but the first person they interview after the game is Victor the Inflictor.
And he ironed out Corey Oates, who lost the ball as well.
Is he really going to play for England?
Oh. Yeah. Well, wants to. I don't know. His dad.
Something about his dad.
Loves his dad. So
I respect him for that. But from an Origin point of view, you think he's got to play sooner rather than later, doesn't he?
Such a shame. If he goes and plays for England, can't play for New South Wales. We missed him, Block. He should have been there Origin 3. Obviously, hindsight's beautiful. I know at the time he was just coming back.
We all talk about it, but that we needed. When you go out and play in a decider up in Queensland, you need all the mongrels you can get, don't you?
100% Block, 100%. Yeah. And we need guys like him. And I know he's got Isaiah Yeo ahead of him at 13 at the moment, and Cameron Murray potentially as well. But surely Freddie next year would have found a place for him somewhere on the bench just to get him involved. And looks like that that won't be happening under the current eligibility laws.
Gee, the Roosters halves were good last night too.
Kiri's back, isn't he, Jared?
Yeah, he was good. Mm. And Semi Walker, what about the little chip over the top? Don't see it too often these days. He's done a couple this year.
He's got a bit of class, hasn't he? Mm. Yeah. But then you throw in Tedesco too, which is probably the number one player in the game, and they're starting to play. They've played half a dozen games together now with Kiri coming back. They're starting to gel, and as I was saying before at the start of the show, timing's everything. You've got to get into the semi-finals, and then the major thing is to be healthy once you get there,
And Brad from Broadbeach, well, I think you're on the other side than us, Brad. Morning, man. Is there any talk of Victor Radley leading with his head when tackling Corey Oates? Lucky Oates didn't have a torn ear. Radley could have been in the same boat as Finucane as reckless. Well, that's the risk, I guess, that Radley takes. But for me, he got him fair and square there last night.
Tell you, he'd be in my team. I mean, everyone, you've got to have blokes where the opposition looks at and goes, wow, I've got to have eyes in the back of my head here against this bloke.
I know they're still going to make the finals, but are we thinking the Roosters are a chance of going deep, deep into the finals, maybe potentially making a grand final?
It's weird, though. Watching them last week, I thought they were ordinary against
Manly. Yeah, in the second half they were, weren't they?
Yeah.
I like throwing back to a lot of our listeners are old school people. They love the footy. Victor Radley reminds me of Bunny Riley. Do you remember Bunny Riley?
For my time.
How much did he weigh, Block?
Mate, Bunny Riley
79 kilos.
That's all he was.
Max.
That's all he was.
Mm.
You know, I've got another good one for you that really amazed me too. The great Wayne Pearce was, mate, near on the best front on defender I've ever seen. His technique was unbelievable. Mitchell's son, right, is heavier than what Wayne Pearce was in his heyday.
And he plays.
Can you believe that?
And he plays halfback. Yeah.
Hey. It's unbelievable. So who else out there, the people, our tradies and all the people that listen to us, the great Bunny Riley, we're going to talk Victor Radley, the great Bunny Riley. Who else? Stumpy Stevens. You remember Stumpy Stevens played with Parramatta? You don't remember Stumpy Stevens?
Nah. My earliest days of watching footy, I can remember, is from 88 onwards, Block.
Really?
Yeah.
You should get some old videos and watch the old Stumpy go about. You know Stumpy Stevens.
You're a bit older than us, Block.
Do you remember him?
Oh, I know the name, but I don't remember much about him.
Yeah, mate, he was a hitman.
0419 767 272 on the text line. Also, back page of the telly, Pat Ban Too Soft. Adam Dewey yesterday saying that, sticking up obviously for his teammate Jackson Hastings, considering how long he's out, he believes Pat Carrigan should have got more, and I think that seems to be a sentiment across a lot of people, and we've discussed it already here this morning. A big story in the AFL on the back page of the telly as well, Lions in the buddy hunt. So Channel 9 in Brisbane last night reported that Lance Franklin could be off to the Brisbane Lions, obviously off contract at the end of this year. He's been offered somewhere around $500,000 to continue at the Swans. He wants at least $700,000, according to reports anyway. So that's going to be the one to watch as the Swans hopefully push towards a premiership this year as well.
You'd pay him, wouldn't you?
I understand offering him what they've offered him, the Swans.
Yeah. How long's he got 35, left?
35, I reckon. He'd one to two, but if you're paying Buddy upwards of $800,000 at this start, I know he's a legend.
Yeah, but how many people go through the gate to watch Buddy Franklin
100%
play hoops?
It could screw their salary cap.
Make that money up easy.
They got good. Young players coming through the Swans, I think they've got to be careful.
You understand AFL better than me, Jared, but Brisbane are in the premiership window, aren't they? They've been close the last couple of years, making prelims and whatever else, and they might see Buddy as that piece. Definitely. Just to take him to that next step.
Yeah.
But from a lifestyle point of view, like,
where's he going? The Gold Coast?
Brisbane.
Oh, no. What about the beach at Bondi?
Well, ask Adam Reynolds. He's absolutely loving it up there. He's said openly, like, you know, the rat race down there, you know, family's so much happier up here. It's a bit slower. Weather's, you know, a bit better in winter. So I think, you've seen how many people have moved to southeast Queensland the last couple of years? The amount of Victorians that are up there now. They're loving it.
Do they deliberately bypass us, do they, the Victorians?
Yeah, they're not big fans of
they
us.
They support Queensland and Origin,
think
Block.
They do too.
Yeah, they support
I was surprised
Queensland.
When I was in Western Australia, they support Queensland.
Really?
Yeah. What's wrong with us?
New South Wales against the world, eh?
Only just because we've got a harbour.
Now, on the back page of your paper, the Sydney Morning Herald, Adam, Roosters take flight. And a picture there of that snap butcher after that try, after the little chip over the top from Sam Walker. But also Sydney on firm ground to host NRL Grand Final, written by your colleague Michael Chemis there. And, despite all the standoff between the state government, Perrottet and his cabinet, Peter Volandis and the ARL commission this week, with the NRL saying that, we could sell this to the highest bidder, naturally Brisbane and Suncorp Stadium this year. What's your belief in what will occur?
I think there's a few reasons they'll stay in Sydney, Jared. One, it's very, very late in the season. And they could do it quickly at Suncorp Stadium. They could do that, but I don't think the commission wants to do that. Two, Peter Vlahos has openly said that, well, if the New South Wales government's going to walk away from their agreement, we're not going to walk away from our end of the bargain. We're going to hold up our end of the bargain and keep it in Sydney. But three, I think the one thing that people haven't been talking about too much is the fact that a core stadium has 80,000 seats. Suncorp Stadium only has 50,000 seats. Mm.
It's all about the folding.
The NRL Grand Final block is one of the biggest revenue raisers for the NRL all season. They can sell an extra 30,000 tickets in Sydney. Mm. Yes, it was great we had the Grand Final at Suncorp last year, but we need to have the Grand
and
Final
the other
at Suncorp
thing too
last year.
Is it's been in Sydney since 1908.
Yes.
The Lovely.
Don't you love the Lovely?
Speaking of the Lovely.
The Moolah.
I had a little same game multi last night. And I never talk about my winnies because they're very rare.
Yeah, well, that's why. You only ever hear punters when they win.
I had Roosters, Kurt Capel to score, Joseph Swali to score. Those two scored in the last two tries of the game in the last 10 minutes. Scenes in my lounge room.
Were you still awake?
Scenes. Just.
Yeah. Well, scenes? Were you by yourself?
Well, I was about to go to bed, but then when Capel scored, I was like, I better just stay up now. See what happens. And then that beautiful pass over the top from Teddy.
Yeah.
Swaley just untouched.
Yeah. Well invested in it, eh?
Yeah. High five the wall.
In the kick.
Well, you got a bank for the weekend.
That's it. Little bank. Well, I withdrew straight away.
You did withdraw straight away, did you?
You know what happens.
run us through what you do when you work hard, so hard on early mornings all week. I would imagine that Mondays would be a tough slog getting up early, but... Give us a little bit of a rundown on what you do on the weekend.
Well, reward myself Thursday night block. I get a bottle of red, sit down, watch the footy.
What, on your own?
Well, generally, yes.
Oh, what about any cheese and bickies or anything like that?
Well, I had probably some. Well, last night I had a pizza for dinner, so that was a big reward. Mm-hmm. And then Friday at 9:01, anyone wants to go for lunch, I'm available.
What, on Fridays?
Yeah.
So lunch a lot.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. This Friday morning, we've got Steve Blocker-Roach and Adam Pengilly in Clarkey and Loz's chair this morning. Unfortunately, Loz on his way back to his homeland there at Junee, has a funeral there today. And Clarkey is just sunning himself in Europe. And so these two are stepping up to the plate. Blockbet is back, powered by Tab, of course.
Is it back?
Blockbet is back. The Sticky Wings Big Sports Breakfast Multi is back, and your two great minds have come together. Let's start with the racing component. Adam, what have you got for us?
I feel the pressure, Jared, because Block has been absolutely flying with these multis.
Good guessing.
Yeah, we've got two racing legs for this multi tomorrow at Randwick. Race 5, number 2, Equation to run top 4. I've really liked his trial so far this time in. He's come back as a gelding. I think he can run top 4. And my other racing legs will be in the very next race. Race 6, number 1, Mautai for Casey Fogden. Another horse is resuming as a gelding. Has some really nice form last spring. Lost his way a little bit in the autumn, but I think it's a really nice race for him there. 1,000 metres as a gelding. Trialled up well from barrier 1. Huey Bowman can smoke his pipe, and we need him to run a place. So that's race 5, number 2, Equation, run top 4. And race 6, number 1, Mautai to run a place.
It's 3 legs, though. And Blocker, you are throwing in?
I'm throwing in the Canberra Raiders at a sellout Raiders stadium to beat the Penrith Panthers, who are starting to be decimated by injury. Mm. And I think the Raiders, they're sitting about ninth now in the competition.
Yeah.
And I'm tipping them to make the top 8. So that whole multi for Sticky Wings is paying a whopping $9.
$9.
I like it.
Good value.
3-legger with Blockbet. And Adam, powered by Tab, today's offers. Just go to the Tab app, the Tab website, click on today's offers. And there you'll find it, the Big Sports Breakfast Best. And $9 as Block mentioned. By the way, that Raiders Panthers game, I saw on wildwatersports.com.au, a Raiders official quoted, "We don't like their attitude, plain and simple. We have been waiting for this game and are planning an ambush. They are arrogant and we aim to bring them down a few pegs." Not missing the Penrith Panthers. They've had some incidents. Of course, the Penrith crowd gave them the Viking clap earlier this season.
That's good.
Joe Tarpany got caught up in a try celebration of the Panthers, and that kicked off. I think that was last year as well.
Stephen Crichton with a blue on the sideline.
Yeah. So there is going to be... You reckon Ricky won't have them fired up for this one, Block?
Licking the paints off the wall. Is that what they'd be doing?
What a chance for Canberra, though. For top eight spots against, a decimated Penrith side, and they will be ready.
And they've got some guns in their side, too.
I reckon there's one player who'll be right in the thick of it there on Saturday. I think you like him, Block. Hudson Young.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good player.
He loves to get in the gutter, doesn't he?
He loves it, doesn't he?
I reckon Papali will be fired up. Tarpany, good pack. It's going to be on against Fisher-Harris.
Is that the 5:30 game Saturday?
Yes, I think so.
5:30 game Saturday. Okay, so that's going to be a cracker. Canberra and Penrith, nation's capital, and the market would tab just head-to-head for that one.
And you know what would make it even better? Apparently now it's really pouring down in Canberra. So if that continues, that makes it even better.
Big game for the Raiders. I still think they can make the eight. I really do. With the draw they've got, and with Penrith being so decimated, I think it's a huge chance for them to really try and cement that spot.
Well, especially when you take your halves away. Both the halves are out. And they're the guys that control everything, aren't they? So I can't see how they're going to have any fluency in the game. They might surprise me, but I reckon it's a big chance for the Raiders.
$2.40. They've actually drifted since yesterday. They were $2.30 yesterday, Canberra. So $2.40, Penrith $1.58, 3.5 is your line for that one. And Canberra are the plus. On the text line, morning boys, 6 weeks ago, I thought we were gone, but the 20-1 last week looked too good to miss. Going from possibly missing the eight to now the chance of, I dare say, to top four. Go the Chooks. The Raby Rooster sending that one through. So all of a sudden you're hoping for top four. Although I think they're only one game out now, aren't they? But that's before some other results this weekend. And the Storm are up against the Titans tonight. And Brandon Smith returns for that game. And Brandon Smith, what about yesterday? So Craig Bellamy. Well, earlier this week, Brandon Smith was saying I was benched from training as a result of his suspension for calling the referee. Well, he called the referee a cheat and got suspended. Yesterday, Craig Bellamy just goes, I think he's living in fantasy land a bit. He might have done a couple of sessions like by himself, but he's been with the group quite a bit of the time.
He's tossing them up, is he?
Maybe one block, and we'll speak about this after. We're going to speak to Phil. Well, Loz and I spoke to Phil Moss over in Bali to preview the Premier League. But coach punishment, surely over your time, you would have come across some cracking coach punishments. Loz has already told us that great story about Tommy Radonikis and what he did at Wests when he
was sitting on top of the hill and
polished back a case while he watched his players run and up and down bunger. The hill for about an hour.
Like two things that ruin footy players, beers and bungers. He used to sit on his esky, but you get him up the hill.
Was Warren Ryan brutal at times?
Brutal. I reckon the worst thing we used to do was a thing called King of the Ring. And what happens was you get in the middle and you've got to wrestle each of your teammates. So say the forward pack stands around you, Big Ciro and Bruce Maguire and Junior, and you're in the middle. You're in the middle and you've got to wrestle them, get them on the ground, mate. I'm telling you, it is worse than actually playing a game. Mm. It's terrible. If you can survive that against all those guys, you can survive anything.
The ring of death.
Yeah. Yeah, mate, it was terrible.
Sounds like fun. But even
the sandpit, if someone missed, three tackles in a game, they'd be in the sandpit. That was torture.
In the sandpit, what do you mean?
Well, they used to dig this sandpit out, and you had to do all your tackling in there, they'd send people at you and
the sandpit.
Yeah, oh mate, not good.
Do you reckon they ever do that anymore at all, modern day?
What do you mean?
Any of those old school drills?
No, but they should. Mate, some of them can't tackle, so mate, the only way to learn is to do it. Mm. You know what I mean? I remember Warren Ryan was, I've talked about him a heap of times, what a great coach he was and so smart. He'd finish off each session with six sets of six on the big tackle bags, just so you had in your mind and you're thinking defence. Do you know what I mean? So every session you'd finish, you'd have to do like 36 tackles, which is pretty hard, mate. When you think about it, after a session, you're looking at me like I'm a bit...
I couldn't imagine doing it, Block.
Des Tuddenham, who was Essendon coach in 1975, after an 80-point loss to Carlton, he made his players crawl on their hands and knees around the oval twice. So around the boundary line, an AFL oval, obviously about, 400 metres. So that was his coach punishment. The players found it degrading.
Then they won
four games in a row after that.
Because they didn't want to do that again.
It's always got to be a softly, softly approach these days, doesn't it, with modern-day players? They need a cuddle rather than a kick, a lot of them.
definitely do. Well, joining us now, all the way from his holidays in Bali, that is the kind of commitment we love. Phil Moss joining us. Mossy, how are you?
I'm great, Mido. Good to speak to you, Loz and Gowie. You know, sometimes you just got to do what it takes for the team.
Well, there's a rumour going around, Mossy, that you're holidaying with Arnie, and the reason that you're holidaying with Arnie, you're trying to get on the coaching staff for the World Cup.
No, that's impossible, matey. He'll only take quality coaches to a tournament like that, Loz. So, no, I'm no shout for that, mate. Just over here helping him relax and get focused for the sharp end of the preparation.
The things he'd do for a junket, Loz. Anything.
That's exactly right, you know. Mm. That's exactly right. I'm sure Mossy would have said to him, mate, if anyone pulls out at the last moment, I'm available.
Oh, look, I just said simply to him, mate, if I was in your shoes for that last qualifier against Peru, you know, that's an easy decision, putting Redmayne in for the penalties.
Well, Mossy, we're going to do a big Premier League season preview with you. But firstly, I wanted to ask you about Ernie Merrick's new football role at Football Australia. Tell us about this.
Yeah, look, it's a brilliant appointment by FA CEO James Johnson and senior management and the board for ratifying it. Ernie Merrick is a multiple premiership and championship winning coach in the A-League. He's got 40 years experience. He may have a slight Scottish accent, but he's an Aussie coach through and through, and he's got a real strong passion for Australian football. And it's a new role, chief of football, that will oversee just about everything to do with the football department. You talk about coach education, the pathways for young players, bringing the state federations together. It's a massive job, and you know, some have been in similar roles in the past and not got the cut through they were looking for. I honestly believe this is one of the most significant appointments that we've had in Australian football, and in a time of unprecedented opportunity with the Men's World Cup, obviously, later this year, and then hosting the Women's World Cup. There's a chance we may be hosting an Asian Cup as well. We've got junior national teams in major tournaments as well. So a great time for someone like Ernie to come in. I believe he's going to be given not just the blank canvas and the paintbrush, but actually the art studio, which will give him a chance to really reset things and work with the likes of Trevor Morgan, Ronnie Smith around coach education, and obviously the state federations with pathways. So really looking forward to what Ernie's going to bring to this role.
With that then, Mossy, what type of coach was Ernie Merrick, and what can we expect in a year or two's time from, you know, this technical director's role, and what type of football will we see, you know, Australians playing into the future?
Well, Loz, he'll have technicians in place, so his role will be to appoint, you know, technical coaches and technical directors, I guess, in his team. But so, you know, he won't be on the field as such coaching teams. But I think the thing about Ernie's coaching was he always bought teams together to play a really attractive style of football, and it was successful. He won titles. So, you know, if ever we needed someone capable of bringing people together and working in the same direction for a great outcome, it's now, and that's Australian football, bringing the state federations, all the stakeholders, not just the state federations, but the stakeholders together for the betterment of the game. And, you know, we've got a great opportunity now, and I think that's what he will bring. His collaborative approach, he's got a fantastic nature, great stature in the game, but also in sport more broadly, because you know, he's been a mentor for an AFL club as well for the last few months. So, you know, he's well respected and well regarded.
Okay, the Premier League starts Saturday morning our time at Selhurst Park, Crystal Palace up against Arsenal. But just overall, Mossy, Man City are $1.62 to win the title again. Liverpool $3.50. Tottenham are the best back side. I'd say punters are looking for value, obviously, outside the top two in the market. But Tottenham have been 26 into $13, just back to $15. But 33% of the money in the winner market has been for Spurs since this market opened. Chelsea at 17, Man United and Arsenal both $26, and Arsenal are in from 51. How do you see this season playing out as far as that winner market is concerned?
Well, I'm going to go against the favourites, of course, because I honestly believe, and this is the head, not just the heart, Mido, but I honestly believe Liverpool will win the title. And my reason for that is I honestly think they've got more goal scorers. You know, they both, obviously, their defence speaks for itself, and you know, they've kept their goalkeepers and the majority of their defensive structure, or defensive players, if you like, both clubs. But I honestly think that you know, Liverpool, with what they've lost Mane, of course, but bringing in Nunes, who's hit the ground running straight away, and that adds to the likes of Mo Salah, of course, Firmino, Jota has just re-signed a long-term deal, Diaz. I think they've got more goals from different players, whereas I think Manchester City are putting a lot on the shoulders of Haaland. You know, they've lost Raheem Sterling, Jesus, just to name a few. There's quite a few goals in those two players, and they've gone to other Premier League clubs. So I just feel Liverpool, and the way Nunes has started his time at Liverpool, has all the hallmarks of a championship or title-winning side this season. I think it's going to be close between the two, of course, but I honestly think Liverpool are a decent value at $3. I think they're around $3.25 to Man City's $1.57. And I really like, I do like Spurs. If they can keep Harry Kane, now there's been some recent rumours and talk of him potentially going to Bayern Munich to replace Lewandowski. If they lose him, wow, that's a massive, massive loss. And of course, the transfer window's open till the end of August, so still some nervous few weeks coming up for Spurs fans.
You mentioned Man City and Haaland there before, Mossy. What type of impact will he have on this league?
Well, you know, hopefully, obviously, for Pep Guardiola and Man City fans, a massive impact, Loz, but he's still 22 and he's been in Germany for a long time. So it takes time for players to adapt to the Premier League, particularly young players. And I know he's, you know, he's a giant of a human being, but he's still, you know, still 22, and that's not, you know, he's not a child by any stretch, but he's still got a lot of his career ahead of him. So you've got to give players like that time to settle in. And, you know, we saw him in the Community Shield, you know, missed a couple of opportunities. So how long it takes him to settle in will be the big thing. His quality is not in any doubt whatsoever. Everyone knows he can score goals, and a lot of them, and he's a fantastic footballer, worth every penny that Man City paid. But he's got to prove that, and he's got to hit the back of the net regularly and replace those goals that, you know, Jesus and Raheem Sterling gave Man City last season.
Yes, Haaland is the $4 favourite in the top goal scorer market this season, from Mo Salah at $6, Harry Kane $7, and Gabriel Jesus at $9. But always fascinated in the relegation battle as well, Mossy. Now, how's this? At Tab, bets on Manchester United at 1,000-1 to be relegated, $300, $200, and another $300 bet at $751 to get relegated. That would be an absolute disaster, and hard to envisage that happening. But when you look at these clubs that have come up to the Premier League this season, Nottingham Forest, great to see them back in the Premier League. Their second favourite to be relegated at $2.20. How do you think they will go?
Yeah, look, it's going to be tough. It always is for the clubs that come up. You know, if you think of Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest and Fulham, it's going to be very, very tough. But Bournemouth are favourites for the wooden spoon. They're obviously favourites to go down off the back of that. I've got Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, and Leeds United. Now, this is not going to be popular with Leeds fans, but I'm not overly impressed with what they're doing. I wasn't overly impressed with them when they came to Australia and what they had to show. I didn't think they had an extra gear like the other clubs did. And let's compare apples with apples. If you look at Leeds and, say, an Aston Villa on their tour of Australia, I just thought Aston Villa had so much more purpose about what they did, intensity and quality. And Leeds, you know, they lost Calvin Phillips to Manchester City, a lot of money, and haven't really gone to market to spend it to replace that quality with players that can create and score goals. I think that's where they're really lacking. So Jesse Marsh, the US coach, I think's got a you know, he's got a very, very tough season ahead. If he lasts the season, he may well be the first coach to get sacked. Who knows? But, yeah, I see Forrest going down, unfortunately, with Bournemouth and Leeds.
What do you see as the standout games this weekend, mate?
Oh, mate, round one, they're all standouts because it just means the Premier League's back, Loz. But obviously, you know, I'll be watching Fulham at home to my Liverpool, of course. But I think, you know, one that stands out for me, and it's not the highest profile game at all, but Everton and Chelsea. I think that'll be interesting to see how Everton can get their season off and running. Chelsea with Thomas Tuchel. You know, they'll be keen to get off to a good start. But the other one that I was looking at is Leicester and Brentford. You remember last season, Brentford got off to a great start in the Premier League and was a really tough place to visit for teams. But they're away to Leicester this time, and I think Brendan Rodgers is under some pressure this season to really lift Leicester and go closer, if not, you know, secure a Europa League spot in fifth or sixth spot. And also Newcastle. I think Newcastle are under huge pressure. Eddie Howe did a great job turning them around last season. But they are owned by big, big money owners now. And, you know, they need to be really pressing hard for Europa as well.
Have you got an opening weekend multi or a fancy, just a single bet that you like, Mossy? What are you thinking?
Oh, it's so tough to tip for opening round. Mido, I've always said that the competition really doesn't settle until about round four or five. But, of course, we've got a multi for our listeners. I'm going to go with Arsenal to get over Crystal Palace away from home into Newcastle to start their season on the right foot against Nottingham Forest into Everton to cause an upset over Chelsea.
Oof.
At Everton.
Well, Everton themselves are paying $5.50 at home in that one. Chelsea $1.65 favourites. But putting Everton with Newcastle and also Arsenal, that three-legger, $16.32 with tap. Something to start with, Mossy. Really tasty if that comes up. You can buy yourself. You can go to one of those really fancy restaurants down at Uluwatu in one of those resorts for dinner.
Or I could just buy 1,000 bintangs.
Make sure you bring home the bintang singlet.
Oh,
as long as it shows off your gun, Blog.
Can you get me one? Can you please buy me a bintang singlet?
I might get you one that's three sizes too small.
That's the one.
That's what he's angling at. Hey, Mossy, enjoy your time over there. We'll catch up soon.
Look forward to seeing you next week, boys. Take care.
This scoreboard update is brought to you by Bingley. See their huge range of appliances in-store or online now at bingley.com.au.
Well, on the text line, as Noodles from Canberra points out, what an upset last night in the netball at the Commonwealth Games. Noodles says, morning legends, special shout-out to Jamaica last night for beating the Diamonds in the netball. It was 57-55, so that's the first time that Jamaica has ever beaten Australia. And our girls blew a six-goal lead heading into the final quarter. So they will now play the winner of the England-New Zealand game. And, of course, England, if they win, will finish top of their pool. They beat us by one goal in the final 4 years ago on the Gold Coast. So that was a shock result at the Comm Games overnight. Now, on this show, we've got Adam Pengilly and Steve Blocker-Roach standing in this morning. No one is immune. No one is immune from criticism on this show. So we've got a couple here for you guys to give your rights of reply. Firstly, also, even Mossy, he just copped it then. Morning, lads. Well, I'm in complete shock. Mossy just picked Liverpool to win the league. Wow, didn't see that coming. What a massive scoop. I think he had too many bintangs before you spoke to him. It's CFC for me. Chelsea says Toddy from Leeton. Well, as you know, Toddy from Leeton, I'm well and truly with Mossy. Okay, we're going to go back earlier. You were making a suggestion, Blocker, that there's only two in the tackle. Try and make it mandatory for only two people in a tackle to prevent the sort of tackle that we saw with the
Pat prevent knee
Garrett.
Injuries and broken ankles and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Well, Peter says, morning, guys. Seriously, Blocker, mothers will be sleeping happier? Is that what you said?
I don't know what he's written there. But anyway, yeah.
Mothers will sleep happier. That comment is exactly what's wrong with the game. That will do me, says Peter. Over to you, Block.
Well, Peter. I'm just trying to work out a way where we can stop all these bad injuries. You mate, you get a knee or ankle injury, you're out for the season. And then it's 5 months rehab or 6 months rehab. So I'm just trying to work out a way. I'm not saying that it'll come in. I'm just making a suggestion. I'm just saying that I'm trying to stop. And I think mothers would like, if there was two in the tackle and you didn't see that third man coming in and breaking legs, and as was seen in the past. I don't know. I'm just trying to toss something up. Sorry.
I apologise. You hold firm, Block.
I'm holding
you
firm.
You take one backward step.
Yes, I'm not saying it'll happen.
Also, over to you, Adam. Morning, guys. Could someone please tell Adam the Swans also have a premiership window? As a sports journalist, you should at least know the basics. Look at the AFL ladder. Cheers and have a good day, says Swannies fan from Normo. And this was in response to earlier. Well, there was a story on Channel 9 Brisbane News last night. The Brisbane Lions are chasing Lance Franklin. Now, the Lions have essentially denied it, but he's in his last year at his contract there at the Swans. Reports suggest the Swans want to pay him somewhere around $500,000 to continue, whereas he wants $700,000 to $800,000. So, Adam, I'm of the opinion that the Swans shouldn't go into that $700,000 to $800,000 mark, despite him being Lance Franklin, what he brings, etc. Go for it.
Well, first of all, Swannies fan, I never said the Swans weren't in the premiership window. I just said the Lions were in the premiership window. I can understand why they're trying to trade for him. So I understand the Swans are having a great year this year, Jared. They're in the top four. They're competing for a flag. But I'm also just making the point that the Brisbane Lions are as well.
Tonight, big game in the AFL as well. Melbourne up against Collingwood. That's 2v3 at the MCG. The Pies have won 10 straight, and Melbourne are $1.35 favourites to break that run of Collingwood's. Collingwood, $3.25. Now, I saw a tweet the other day from former Collingwood Premiership star Dane Swan. If you call a potato cake a potato scallop, you don't deserve to eat them. They're potato scallops, Block.
Scallop, yeah.
Who calls them a
potato cake?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Is this a Melbourne thing? No one calls
it a potato cake. Fancy going in there and going, give us half a dozen potato cakes.
You walk in and you say, I want scallops and chips.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's always been a scallop to me.
Does anyone seriously call them potato? I was shocked to see this. Oh, and I'm wondering, this might be a Victorian thing because they don't understand cakes.
Never, not a fan, Jay.
Unheard of.
Scallops for me.
Yeah, scallops all around. Great. I thought surely we're in the majority there.
I try to be healthy and have the grilled fish, but then I have chips and scallops too.
Now, there were more. We were talking about coach punishments earlier, and there was a text here for you, Blocker, in regards to a boxing session you might have used to do.
Oh, not with Les Hobbs.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so what was that about?
Well, we used to put the big gloves on, and he would teach us how to catch punches and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, no one want to put the gloves on with Les. And I seen him actually; he was our trainer and runner for a long, long time. I won't mention the player, but mate, Les could fight like a thrashing machine. And one of the players, when we played South one day, give him a bit of a gobful. And you talk about trainers blowing up and getting in with Clemmer and all that. My man Les stopped and said, what did you say, son, to the bloke that gobbed off to him? Like, I was thinking, mate, please, call the ambulance now. Like, if he goes off, this bloke, he's like a firecracker. But, yeah, no, we used to do a lot of the punching. He actually taught us how to, how to hold your hands up.
Look, serious question. How many times would you have sprayed someone when you were asked to come from the field?
Oh, every week. Oh, get out of me grill, you know, when blokes would come on and try and give you a drink or try and wipe a bit of blood off you or whatever. I don't know, whatever they used to do. Remember that we used to suck on the sponge? Imagine doing that now. Hey?
The old sponge.
But, blokes coming on and, you know, trying to give you orders and, you know, messages from the coach and all that. Mate, I didn't even hear any of that. Mm. Honestly, I'm too busy trying to do your best.
Also, Blocker, what about the Coogee Road Run? They reckon Mick Neal was hard to beat. Johnny from Moorbank sending that one in.
Mick Neal lapped me one day on the Coogee Run. Oh, mate, that was horrific. We used to do it in the summer. on a Sunday morning. I couldn't sleep Saturday night because we knew we were doing the Coogee run. I tripped one day going through the cemetery there, and I hit my head on the tombstone. The same bloke, Les Hobbs. All the blokes stopped and said, "Oh mate, he's out." Like, it was that hot. It was 40 degrees. Blokes used to fall like flies. Mm. Honestly, it was a bit of a test of courage. Fell down, hit me head on the tombstone.
Just start digging the grave or what?
No, he said, that's what he said. Just roll him in the grave, leave him there. You know, oh. A bit of compassion there.
By the way, with a boxing theme, we lost a great one. Johnny Famichon,
yeah.
Died age 77. He became world featherweight champ in 1969, born in Paris, came to Australia when 5 years of age. He beat Japan's Fighting Harada twice, retired at 25, and by the age of 25, he'd had 67 fights, won 56, wow, and was inducted into the World Boxing Hall of Fame in 1997. He's got legend status in the Australian Boxing Hall of Fame. He was hit by a car when leaving the races at Warwick Farm back in 1991 as well and suffered brain damage. So that was a huge thing for him to deal with in the latter part of his life. But gone at the age of 77, Johnny Famichon. Give us a call, 1353 53, and just on the potato scallop situation.
The text line's going crazy, Jared.
It is 100% a Melbourne thing. Potato cake, geez, it took me 15 years to get the missus to call them scallops, and she's from west of Albury. Regards, the Raby Rooster, says that. Who was that Nuffy talking about potato cakes? Potato cakes are crumbed, scallops are battered. And that's...
Potato cakes are crumbed?
Mm.
I've never had a crumbed potato cake. Or scallop.
Yeah, I don't get it either, right?
You can do lunch with Jared this afternoon if you want. Try it out.
When are we doing that lunch block?
Mate, I'd love to come. What, Six Heads?
Yeah.
Have they organised it yet?
Well, we need the boss.
You ever been to Six Heads?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God.
We don't want to pay for that one.
I'm not paying.
No,
I'm a bit like crime. Crime doesn't pay.
Yeah. Is the boss in today?
Or I'm a bit like the car? I'm a bit like the London fog. I never settle.
We've got... Oh, boys, introduce yourselves to Chicken Chow Min Jack. Morning to you, Jack.
G'day, Meadows. Boys. Is that Gowies in there?
No, Adam Pengilly, mate.
Oh, pingers. Yeah, right. Get off the pingers. Don't turn me off. What was I ringing up about?
I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, you're ringing.
Victor Radley and the Roosters and Luke Keary. I hate when everyone just raps Tedesco because it's not the Roosters and Tedesco. It's the Keary show. He's the best 5'8", and he's finally come out of it, out of his head knocks. And I think the Roosters might... Oh, you know what? I reckon they win the comp. What do you reckon?
Oh, gee, I reckon that's a long bow, I reckon. I reckon the most important thing now with the comp is getting two bites. If you can make the top four, you're a big chance. I can't see the Roosters making the top four.
No.
I'll make the eight.
So, Block, what do you think the way the system's run at the moment with the top eight is ridiculous? Why can't you win from outside? They should go back to how it was. And before you cut me off, it is scallops.
Yeah, of course it's
scallops. Of course it is.
Well, we've got another text here from Annie who says, lads, they are potato cakes. Victoria and Tassie have it right. Mm. Scallops are scallops, not potato cakes, says Annie.
Well, do we go down there to Melbourne? Do we?
Well,
say no.
No. Week, we'll be there.
Spring Carnival, you'll be there.
Does the program go down there?
Yeah, it does.
Well, I wanted you to say no so I could say they were impos.
Oh, right, because you want to come down, obviously.
Yeah, I want to hammer them.
Yeah.
What sort of imbeciles would call a scallop a potato cake?
Victorian Tassie, apparently. Good on you, Chicken Chow. Thanks, mate. And yeah, Victor Radley, outstanding last night. That head clash, unbelievable. Michael. G'day, Michael.
Good morning, boys.
How are you?
We'll be great, mate. I'm awesome. Mate, Liverpool will be winning the Premier League title.
Hope you're right.
For sure and certain. So do I. Hey, Blocker.
You yes, Michael.
Remember me, mate. You wouldn't remember me, but I'm a mad Balmain Tigers fan, mate. I came to your 10-year testimonial back at Sports Scene at Marketplace, which was a long time ago. You were there with Ciro and Brian Smith, the rugby union convert, the pretty boy.
That's right. He was handsome, wasn't he? Oh, he still is.
He was a good-looking boy, mate. Me and him actually went out with the same girl, but I won't mention it over here. But what I do want to say, mate, at that time I was going through cancer, and just meeting you, who was you were my idol, mate. The way you played the game. You are fearless, mate.
Thanks, and Michael. That's nice of you to say, mate.
Here I am 37 years later, mate. I've had two kids when they told me I couldn't have kids, and I've never had an opportunity to thank you, mate. But it was a big boost meeting you and Ciro and Brian Smith that day. And, mate, I actually had a holiday where I met up with Wayne Pearce. We were staying at the same resort.
Whereabouts was that? It'd be top class, mate. No, my man, Junior.
It was in Bali. It was called the Bali Nixoma. And the day after Pearce came, Junior, bloody Big Dipper came.
Big Dipper, yeah.
Legend, who was another hero of mine playing AFL, being a wog, because I'm a wog too. You know, I'm not afraid to say it. You know, I took that as a medal on the chest, mate, when they used to call me a wog. But
Michael, that's a Western Oriental gentleman. You know that?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah. Mate, I'm born and bred in Sydney from Greek parents. But, mate, go the Tigers, and thank you for having me on today.
Good on you, Mike.
Good on you, Michael. Well done, mate. And go the Reds, Michael. No, you're a big Reds man, so thank you for the call as always. Sky Racing's Ali Mosley about to join us. Yesterday, what about Hosier winning the Coffs Harbour Cup, Adam?
Yeah, very promising horse, Jared. Transferred up to Chris Lee's to qualify for the big dance, I believe, now through that Coffs Harbour Cup. So he started a short price favourite and duly won. And Lloyd and Nick Williams have had a successful trip to the provincials, haven't they?
What's going on with Alligator Blood?
Yeah, fascinating story, Jared. He's Race of Victoria come out yesterday and banned him from the spring carnival, so he will not be able to contest any races down there at all throughout the whole spring, including the Cox Plate, which was what he was being targeted to. That follows on from New South Wales putting a ban on him early this year over his owner, Alan Andrews's undischarged bankruptcy status. So he's left with no options now virtually in Australia, really, to be honest. Not until the end of this year. I think they might look at potentially Japan or even Hong Kong, because basically, the only state that allows him to race at the moment is Queensland. Mm. And what does he do? Wait for the Magic Millions Carnival in January next year? It's like it's a good 5 or 6 months away. So they're in a real pickle at the moment. I think they're meeting with their legal team today to see if they can appeal that decision from Racing Victoria. But as it stands at the moment, we will not be seeing him racing in Australia for a while.
Now, Ali Mosley is a Victorian.
We need to ask her the question.
Morning, Ali. Potato cake or potato scallop?
Oh, it's a potato cake.
Oh,
no.
Potato cake.
You're kidding.
No, for real. That's a Kiwi thing too, the scallop, I reckon. So Kiwis and Sydney siders must be living on the same sort of horizontal line, because it's definitely a potato cake.
I'm speechless. Let's talk some racing. We were just talking about Hosier in the Coffs Harbour Cup yesterday. Very good performance. Good ride from Huey Bowman.
Oh, enormous, wasn't it? I was really impressed with Monagal. I thought she loomed up to win too. I followed her out of last Saturday, but she sort of faded off a little bit. I think she's ended up fourth or fifth. But, yeah, fantastic. Huge effort. You don't like taking the short price for some of them, but sometimes you just have to, don't you?
Who do you like in the Missile Stakes tomorrow, the feature at Randwick?
Oh, I found this really hard, as I'm sure a lot of people will. It's sort of almost like not necessarily a throw at the dartboard, but it's a really tricky race to read, and I sort of kept going over it and changing my selections. I kept falling back on Forbidden Love just purely because she's the class horse, and then I went away from her, so that didn't help at all. So I've basically flip-flopped the whole time. She's certainly the best horse in the field. She's got the first up form, races well, fresh. I think the query will be the sticky barrier and whether she takes a sit or Huey decides to punch forward on her. I'm just not sure. I saw Count De Rupi actually a week ago in the stables. We went to visit Rob and Luke Price, and I was really impressed with how forward he's looking. He's obviously got that residual fitness, so he will have ultimately probably only had, if anything, about a week off. So he's got that residual fitness, which I really like coming into this first up. So he is who I've landed on, Count De Rupi. And then I also like at the value, and I'm just going to watch her because she's a really interesting one. That's Enchanted Heart. I think she'll get back on a hot speed with a lightweight and with luck. She could snatch this. She's on the weak backup, but I think Randwick will suit her better than Rose Hill.
If you were to lean in the Missile, Adam.
Yeah, found it a really hard race, Jared. I probably leant towards Forbidden Love just by default, but a race I'm treading very carefully in. I think there's a lot of horses obviously first up in their preparations, but hard to get a gauge on, but I just leant towards Forbidden Love just due to her racing pattern.
Gee, an Enchanted Heart, $21 there in that race as well. We've got a question from a listener here for you, Ali. Can you ask Ali her thoughts on Cacophonix, race four, number one at Randwick. Cheers.
Yeah, so this is another one that I found tricky, and it's the three C's that I landed on. So it's Cooterati, Conqueror, and Carcophonix. I said will be the top three. In what order, I'm not sure. I like the value of Carcophonix. He's back on a more suitable deck. So when he was on a heavy eight at Rosehill a couple of weeks ago, everyone was querying whether he'd handled that, because being a Kiwi, you'd think he would have seen a heavy track, but I don't actually think it's in any of his form lines. He's stepping up in trip, which will be a big tick for him. And he was the progressive horse out of that Rosehill Gardens run. If I was going to go against any of them, it could potentially be Conqueror in the yard. I have to pick a yard tomorrow, actually, purely because he's had quite a bit of time off and he can get a little bit above himself. So I think Carcophonix at the value, and particularly as a bit of a yard watch, will run a super race and will be top three.
What's your best bet on the program?
Oh, I found this hard. So I'll throw in a best. Well, okay. I've got a best bet and a best value bet.
Love it.
Best bet. And he makes me nervous. He always does. Is Mautai.
Well, Adam's in your
Adam's
corner.
Adam's got that one, yeah.
You got him too? Oh, good. I've really liked this horse for a long time. But as we know, as everyone knows, he's been very frustrating. I'm sure none more so than to his trainer, Casey Fogden. But back now, I think, is he back officially at Gelding, Adam? Now?
Yes, he is, Ellie. Yep,
yeah.
Come back at Gelding.
Yep, and I want to say, Ben Way was teasing me last night because I said they'd tinkered with his gear. And he said, I don't think a gelding is tinkering with his gear. And I said, I wasn't referring to that part. They've tried a few other things. So they've got the crossover nose band on, blinkers off now, earmuffs again. It's sort of, everything's going on. They've taken the Norton bit off first time. Sometimes the Norton bit sort of do the opposite to keeping them settled. It can make them sort of be against it. So he's a genuine group-winning horse if he does the right thing. So he is the best bet. And then in the last, my value bet is Rupertar on the week back up.
Okay, Rupertar for Bjorn Baker. That's in the last. That's $19. Yeah. $19 the win, $5 the place. That's race 10, number 4. Ali's value play. Ali, someone here says, Brett from Richmond. I used to like Ali, but it's potato scallop. So you've really got some people offside with this potato cake nonsense.
Although I tell you what, I've lived in Sydney for 3 years now, so maybe it'll start.
It'll catch on.
You have a great weekend. Enjoy trackside tomorrow.
Thank